Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You walk in tired and hungry, one bad dinner away from losing it. You don't like to cook. You don't want more takeout. You just want something good. That's why there's Dish by Blue Apron. Pre-made meals with at least 20 grams of protein and no artificial flavors or colors, from fridge to fork in 5 minutes or less. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
After, 30 years plus of just working, 12 months a year and some 14, 16-hour days, I said, I certainly don't want to go back to that. But I, when the idea presented itself to get involved in this, and honestly, to be on the ground floor of it is pretty cool, too, just to kind of be part of the movement, so to speak.
And our guest this week is Joe Traynor. He is the head women's flag football coach at Division III Immaculata University, new program, a sport that's really exploding in the U.S. And Joe, thanks so much for the time.
I appreciate you having me on, Matt. Great to be here.
So, Joe, you've got a long resume when it comes to football. Why was this opportunity at Immaculata the right one at the right time for you?
Yeah, you know what? If you told me as recently as probably 18 months ago that I would have pursued this, I would have been blown away. I would have said, no, there's no shot. I think part of it was divine intervention. Part of it was just an opportunity to get re-involved in the game of football. I coached college football for 30 years and was away from it for 5 years, and really a chance to grow the game. So that excites me at a place that I think marries up with my values.
So let's talk a little bit about the flag football concept. For people who aren't familiar, I think everybody's kind of familiar with the idea, flag football instead of tackle, it's flag. But we're not talking 11 on 11, right? It's 7 on 7, am I correct?
It's 7 on 7. As this becomes a sanctioned sport across the country, there's different, some states play it 5v5, but 98% of the high schools that are playing throughout the country, it's a 7 on 7 format.
And so basically you're kind of eliminating, for the most part, your interior lines, and has more of the look, maybe a lot of fans would be familiar, kind of a training camp passing drill.
You know what? It's a little different than that. Obviously, we snap the ball. The center's eligible to go out and receive. And there was some misconception that I had when I first got involved. You think of the 7-on-7 that takes place for tackle football. You have those 7-on-7 tournaments at high schools. And to your point, when you go to see a college or an NFL team, you watch a 7-on-7 drill. Just it's the pass game minus the offensive and defensive lines. But this is way more nuanced than I thought it was. The rules are different. The concept of how you move the football is a little different. It's more exciting, I think, than 7-on-7, than just traditional 7-on-7 football.
Yeah. So kind of dig into that a little for me, because that's one of the things I want to talk about. When you start talking about scheme and play call and stuff like that, what makes the flag football scenario unique, and what are some things you kind of lean on from what you're trying to do out there play to play?
Yeah. So yardage, it's an 80-yard field. It's probably about 40. It's anywhere from 40 to 42 yards wide. And then you have to cover certain yardages in a specific amount of time. before you, as you move the football, before you get what they would call first downs. So it goes in 20-yard increments. In three downs, you have to get 20 yards to gain a first down. You can certainly go for it on fourth down. But if you don't get it like regular football, the other team gets the ball at that point. There's 2-point plays where, if you want to go for two, you can put the ball on the 10-yard line. It's just, it's pretty exciting. Quarterbacks can run. You can run the ball. You can pass the ball. You can double pass it. You can line four or five receivers up to the same side. So it's a little more of what I would call wide open, and certainly defensively, you can pose more challenges for teams to stop you.
We were talking before, just getting the nuts and bolts of this. This is new for the conference. Your conference has kind of been leading the way in blazing a trail for this at the collegiate level. And you're a varsity sport, but being sanctioned by the NCAA is a work in progress, correct?
Yeah, I think if you look at Pennsylvania, New Jersey, right? So I anticipate next year, as the start of spring sports, there was 98 teams that were playing girls flag football in the PIAA. Jersey's on the same kind of parallel. I think the threshold is 100. You need 100 teams before it becomes a sanctioned sport by the state bodies, the governing bodies of athletics. So I would anticipate within the next year, it's going to be sanctioned as a high school sport, and certainly in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, PA. It's exploded. I mean, last year there was between 500,000 and 600,000 girls between the ages of 7 and 17 playing flag football. People don't realize this, but even before the Taylor Swift phenomenon, with Travis Kelce, there was 52% of the viewing audience was female. So it's just being, I probably underestimated the groundswell of support for flag football. And at a place, honestly, where, I think women's basketball was the foundation of female athletic sports, certainly from a, high school and college standpoint. And I believe, obviously, with our tradition, at Immaculata, we were not only was Philadelphia the birthplace of basketball, but Immaculata University was really the birthplace of the birthplace, so to speak.
So talk to me a little bit about, you guys had your first season back earlier this year. It was a kind of a truncated, it was more of a weekend. I think talking to you off the air, I kind of equated it to kind of a soft opening. How was the experience with everything?
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. And that's a great analogy with the soft opening. We practiced 2 or 3 days a week for 4 weeks leading up, 4 or 5 weeks leading up. Obviously, you weren't able to address recruiting because the announcement was in middle of February and we were playing in the middle of April. So wasn't a lot of lead time to get it off the ground. But so there was a lot of other female athletes that were participating in other sports throughout their career. It was the off season for soccer and track and some of those sports, women's basketball. So some of those female athletes, some of those women came out and participated. Some of them will be staying with us. But it was really just raising awareness. I think our league, Paul Murphy, our athletic director, who was really one of the ADs who spearheaded this whole thing. Our commissioner was amazing. We had an opportunity to host it, which was awesome. I think we had the nicest athletic facilities in the conference. So we had a chance to showcase our beautiful campus and our athletic facilities. And having it be a one-day format for all four teams involved, it was pretty cool. The Eagles cheerleaders were there. The mascot was there. So it was a ton of excitement and really cool to be a part of that.
Was your roster was only like a dozen? Looking at the, I'm just going off the website, it looked like about a dozen players this year. What is that correct? And once this thing gets cooking on a regular basis and a full schedule and all, what are you looking at roster size?
I would say roster management, you're probably looking at 26 to 28 women. It's 7-on-7. You want to get to a point where nobody's playing both ways. You kind of have a position specific roster. I think that's in my head, that's kind of an operational number that I keep coming back to. 26 to 28, no more than 30, I would say.
And what is that like? You're used to coaching football. You've been a head coach multiple places. You're usually talking you got about 100 kids, if not more, on your roster. Much smaller here. I would imagine it's a different dynamic and maybe a chance to get to know the players better, as far as it's just from a pure number standpoint, easier to get your arms around. And, you can really have a closer relationship with the kids, and maybe sometimes in tackle football at the college level it allows just because there's just so many players.
Yeah, there's no question. It's a much more intimate athletic environment. Women are way easier to coach than men. I can promise you that. They listen. They have better listening skills. The concept of team, it's I think it's more inherent for females. Yeah, and it was awesome. And, you know, and again, I'm trying to establish credibility as someone who traditionally has only coached males, you know, in a female environment. So I look at that as a great challenge. Having a daughter, you know, I want to make sure she has the same opportunities as my sons, you know, so that kind of motivates me too. But it was great. And the female athletes that I was coaching, they were awesome. It couldn't have been a more positive experience for me. And I think they get, you know, pretty much, I think 95% of the women that played for us this past spring are returning next fall.
You mentioned that, you know, if someone had mentioned this to you 18 months ago, you would have been like, what? What are you talking about? I don't see that happening. What's kind of the window of opportunity that opened into this chance at Immaculata? How was it? Was it something you saw and you took the lead in pursuing? Did your phone ring and all of a sudden it sounded like the right chance at the right time?
Yeah. Well, Paul Murphy, you know, we didn't know each other, but we knew we had shared friends, you know, along the way. And I think that's how it came about. You know, I retired from coaching 5 years ago, and both of my sons were playing at the University of Delaware. And when my oldest son was down there as a freshman, I made the decision at that point, like I didn't want to, I had this window of opportunity to see my sons. A lot of times in coaching, when you're doing it as a career, there's an old adage, you coach everyone else's kids but your own. So I didn't want to miss out on that opportunity to support my own children. So I got out of that. And obviously I haven't missed one of their games since. My daughter was a lacrosse player. She graduated from Lansdale Catholic. She works in operations, football operations up at the University of Rhode Island. So, but I didn't want to miss out on, you know, my children and their high school experience. And I missed out on a lot of that, but I didn't want to miss out on the college experience. So I was sitting there, my wife's still working. We were empty nesters. And I was sitting there getting home from my job at LaSalle High School, you know, 3:30. And I was like, holy mackerel, like I have too much free time on my hands. After, you know, 30 years plus of just working, you know, 12 months a year and some 14, 16 hour days, I said, you know, I certainly don't want to go back to that. But I when the idea presented itself to get involved in this, and honestly, to be on the ground floor of it is pretty cool, too, just to kind of be part of the movement, so to speak. It's been pretty special.
So let's dig into your story now. Growing up, were you football all the time? Or were you playing a bunch of different sports?
I was, you know, when I speak at banquets, I always say, you know, if Division III is the lowest level and the nose guard's the least athletic person on the field, arguably for 4 years in college, I was one of the 60 worst football players playing college football at the time. So, but I loved sports. Football was really my passion. I played at Dickinson College and then graduated with an English degree. Thought I was going to coach high school football and teach English. And I had an opportunity shortly after I graduated to be a graduate assistant coach at Temple University in Philadelphia. And that was awesome. And I thought I was going to get my master's degree and then go back and coach high school football. But it was just God had different plans for me. And I ended up carving out a 30-year career coaching at the college level.
When you were young, what was it about football that resonated with you that made it kind of rise to the top and be something that was at the top of your list?
Yeah, I think the concept of team, you know, being a good teammate, and I think football, because it's every sport has its challenges, but football is a grind. You know what I mean? That, you know, it's not natural for you to put on 12 pounds of equipment and hit somebody and endure a bit, you know, the hot weather. And I think football, because of its conditions, promote the concept of team. Not that I'm comparing football to the military, but I think the intensity of the relationships can be stronger because of what you're enduring, you know, as you prepare. And then the other thing about football, I think relationship, like you play fewer high school, college, it doesn't matter. You play fewer competitions than any other athlete out there, right? You know, in high school, you're playing 10, maybe 11. If you have a state run, you can maybe play some playoff games, but basketball, high school basketball, you're playing 35 to 40 games. Baseball, you're playing, you know, at least 30. You know, soccer, you're playing, you know, 12 to 14, maybe 16 competitions. So I think the relational component in football because the game itself isn't enough to kind of sustain you. It certainly wasn't enough to sustain me. So there were other factors that went into that too.
You mentioned the kind of the focus was high school coach originally. You get the opportunity at Temple. When did you make the decision that the college level was where you wanted to be? Or was it a decision that was made for you that you kind of get 3, 4, 5 years into it, and that's where the network is, you're having success, and that's where you're going to be?
Well, it's funny. So, coaching's a little like, it's like acting. You know, that's my analogy, right? Like everyone sees, you know, Tom Hanks or Bradley Cooper, you know, you see, oh God, that wouldn't I love to do that? And then you don't realize there's 5,000 steps between, you know, the MGM contract, you know, if you're an actor, or, you know, you getting on ESPN, right? So, you know, you have to take a lot of bad jobs. We're all overworked and underpaid, but like, I think some of the job opportunities in coaching are sparse. So I'll never forget, you know, I took a job at Frostburg State University. Temple was an easy job for me because I was from Abington, PA. I took the train in. I took the train home. I almost felt like it was right after college. So I almost felt like I was, you know, it was on an extended break, you know. And then after 2 years at Temple, the graduate assistant position ended. And this is 1991, 92. I took a job at Frostburg State in the hills of Maryland, in the mountains of Maryland, western part of the state, for like $12,000 or something, you know, $10,000, no benefits. And I'm driving down there with a 10-year-old car, two duffel bags. And I'm like, wow, I guess this is my calling, because, you know, I wasn't going for, you know, fame and fortune at that point, nor was I going for a ton of security. So I knew at that point that, you know, I was going to try my hand at it, and I was encouraged by some of my mentors to give it a run, and it was a great 30-year run.
What was it about coaching that resonated with you?
Well, I mean, I had my first couple of years, what sustained me, it was I couldn't play anymore, so it was just enough to, you know, the next best thing to playing was coaching, you know. And then through maturity and through experience, you realize, okay, man, I've had so many, you know, when I looked back at my career when I was 24, 25, most of the strongest influences on me were former coaches, high school and college. So as I matured, I was like, man, I have a chance to maybe make a difference and transform somebody's life for the better. I've always viewed myself as a teacher. It's just, you know, my classroom wasn't a laboratory, or didn't have a chalkboard and 40 seats, but I've always viewed myself as a teacher. And as I grew into the job, it's as much life coach as it is football coach, I think.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Joe Traynor coming up in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda. KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Joe Traynor, head women's flag football coach at Division III Immaculata University. So you eventually get a job at Villanova at a program, just a ton of success under Andy Talley those years. What brought you to the main line? Obviously, you know, Abington, Temple, you're in the circles, but what opened the door to Coach Talley's staff?
Yeah, so I was friends with a guy, Dave Clawson, who's actually the head coach at Wake Forest right now, and he recommended me for the job, thank God. And I went down there and I interviewed, and I think I was 28 at this point, 27 maybe, and I went down there and had a chance to work with amazing coaches, and for an amazing man, Coach Andy Talley is, you know, I continue to talk to him, you know, all the time, you know, all these years later. He's a Hall of Famer, you know, as a coach. He's a Hall of Famer as a human being, too. So that was a great experience. I was there for 8 years. We had great success. After 2 years, I became the defensive coordinator, and we had some success, and just look so fondly back on my time, both stints at Villanova. 14. I coached for 30 years, and 14 of my years were at Villanova. So almost half of my career was there. So just so many great people, and just so thankful to have experienced that.
I'm curious from the outside, and I've talked with Andy Talley hundreds of times, know him well. it really seems like there are very few head coaches who allow their coaches to coach more than Andy Talley.
Yeah, he was really, you know, he was amazing. I mean, he was still coaching his coaches. I don't know if he ever got enough credit for that. Like, he wasn't micromanaging, but he was, you knew who was in charge. He was, you know, he was a tremendous leader. I learned from him so many things, but one of the things, he was always giving you feedback. You know, I think we get, you know, we sometimes get caught up even, you know, whether it's athletics or non-athletics, like, you know, the year-end review, you know, hey, I'm going to get evaluated. I got my job evaluation coming up. And, you know, his whole thing was always, I took this, you know, certainly after my first time with him, you know, he was always giving you feedback and mentoring you. You know, hey Joe, you know, I don't think you did a great job here. But and a lot of it wasn't scheme; it was more like how you handle relationships or things you could have done better, or, you know, recruiting, or, you know, and he was, it wasn't negative. He was constantly giving you good feedback, bad feedback, and that was that, you know, eliminated your blind spots or my blind spots, but also it promoted more growth. And Andy Talley would have been successful, you know, in corporate America. He would have been a successful, you know, superintendent of schools. He would have been, you know, he was an incredibly successful football coach, but he just had this way of putting people at ease. And he was one of those guys too, which I think is really powerful. Like, you hated to disappoint him, you know? And I think that's like when people, I think, my wife is probably the only other person that I've met that I could say that about, that I've worked with or shared relationships with. Like when somebody doesn't want to disappoint somebody else, man, that's power, you know? And he was always one of those guys. I always wanted to make sure that I didn't disappoint Andy Talley.
So you eventually become defensive coordinator. That's a big role. How was it at first getting used to that? Did you feel ready, or was there a little bit of kicking your feet in the deep end until you found your rhythm?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, I had been a defensive coordinator at University of New Haven, so I had done the job description, so to speak. But, you know, it's like any promotion, Matt, right? Part of you thinks you're prepared for the job, but the other part of you says, hey, I got to grow into the job. You know, whether it's, you know, first time CEO, first time head coach, first time coordinator, first time assistant principal, whatever the role is, when somebody deems you promotable or you're ascending to a higher position, your job description's changing, you know, you say, hey, man, I'm prepared for this. I've had good mentors that have prepared me for this, but the other part of you has to just grow with the job too. And Villanova, you know, not that any job, you know, you can screw any job up. There's no doubt about that. But like, what, you know, when you're selling the product that you're selling at Villanova and you're getting the quality student athletes you're getting there, it's not a hard sell.
From a coordinator standpoint, when it comes to calling defensive sets, calling the plays, do you look at it? Did you look at it more science or art? Like, is it something that you come in and this is what we're going to do and we're going to make it work? Or is it something that is constantly evolving within a game, within a series, and you've got to be ready to use a different brush, if you will, if the situation calls for it?
That's a great question. I think I'm more of the science. Like, I'm not a, how do I want to say this? I was always, and still am, I'm a high rep guy. You know, I'm what we call, like, I always tell my kids, like, I have a couple master's degrees, but, and I'm saying that because I'm not smart, but you can learn. We can all learn. You know, I don't think there's a correlation between aptitude and learning. But so I was a guy that was always, I was more numbers driven and statistical probability driven. And I, you know, and like all great coaches, whether you're a head coach, you're an assistant or coordinator, right? You have, you know, you're in a room with, you know, you're, when I was coordinator of Villanova, you're in a room with four or five other defensive guys. And so part of the challenge, it's no different than the role of a head coach, right? You have certain things that you bring to the table. So you want people that are going to offset your weaknesses, you know, so that everything's kind of covered. So I always needed one or two guys around me that were more the creative guys that were able to kind of paint outside the lines that, you know, when I wanted to stay in the lines. And, you know, like any good leadership, I think, you know, I was smart. I think I was smart enough to listen to the guys that I had around me.
Do you have a favorite memory from your time at Villanova? And you mentioned you had two different stints. So just kind of for this purposes of this question, putting them together. But if you think of your time at Villanova, are there one or two moments, games, or is it just kind of the overall experience that resonates most with you?
Yeah, I think it's the experience. I mean, you know, I was talking to one of my former players last night. You know, you still have, you know, so many of the contacts in my phone are former players, many of whom are, you know, and coaches, many of whom are from Villanova. You know, my first year at Villanova, we were 12-0 before we lost to Youngstown State in the quarterfinals. So I'm like, oh, this is great. And then we beat Temple twice. We beat Rutgers. You know, we had some big wins. Really, at the end of the day, what I took away from my time there was the relationships, just the quality of the people, most of whom were involved in football, but, you know, some of whom, you know, barely touched the football program, but I was fortunate enough to get to know.
So you're at Nova for the first stint till 04. Then you take over as head coach at Millersville. Yeah, you know, we talked about taking over as defensive coordinator. That's a big step. The biggest step is when you're taking over a program. Was it something, the opportunity presented itself and you really wanted to take it? Or did you feel you were at a point in your career where you were ready for the challenge of a head coach and you went kind of searching for the right fit?
Yeah, I was never one of those guys like that was going to chase the golden carrot. I always wanted to kind of just, you know, maintaining some type of work-life balance was always important to me, you know, and Coach Dolly, like, you get spoiled there because we weren't going to work 13 months a year, 8 days a week. He was really big on just maintaining a fresh approach. He felt if you were tired, your players, that would come across when you were coaching your players. And he always wanted to make sure that you were fresh and excited to be around the kids. And I think that's something I certainly carried with me as a head coach. Yeah, certainly the biggest learning curve is when you're becoming a head coach for the first time, because your signature's on the entire program. You're very, closed off when you're the coordinator. It's, hey, keeping them out of the end zone, you know, getting pressure on the quarterback, you know, getting turnovers, get the ball back to the offense. Obviously, there's a recruiting component involved, but, you know, when you're the head coach, you know, how the kids are conducting themselves, you know, in the community and academically how they're doing. And you have the egos of coaches, you know, strong personalities, you're stirring the drink, you're trying to keep everybody on the same page and motivated. So it's definitely a big learning curve. Again, big part of that job is having the ability to grow into it too.
So Millersville and then your head coach at Rhode Island. I think you had a year before you took over as head coach at Rhode Island where you were the coordinator. Did you enjoy the head coaching overall from a day-to-day standpoint?
I loved the relationships, but, you know, I don't know if I ever got comfortable. There's always things that can go wrong when you're the head coach. And I'll never forget. I was the head coach. I think it was my third or fourth season at URI. And I went to my doctor, and for the first time in my life, I was like, I asked him for some anti-anxiety medicine, you know, and I was just like, cause I was anxious all the time. And yeah. And again, you're responsible for the whole thing, right? You know, you're getting calls, you know, in academics, socially, you know, it's a 24/7 job. I look back at that and the strain it puts on your family, at least it put on me and my family. And I probably didn't do a great job of handling that. And I think the thing, when I look back, when I get out of coaching altogether, I look back and it's, everybody works hard. I mean, everybody, like, you're not, you know, coaches, you know, I don't think coaches aren't working, you know, hours wise, there's people that are, you know, working just as hard as coaches. But I don't know if there's another job that you take home with you more than coaching. You know, I would be on family vacation with my family in the summer, and I would be thinking about a recruit, or I would be thinking about a kid that needed to get a B in summer school to be eligible. Or I was thinking about, you know, this coach that interviewed for a couple jobs, you know, losing that coach that you really valued. So it was hard for me to be present with and for my family when I wasn't coaching. And that was, you know, I don't miss being consumed at that level like I was. And it was time, you know, I did it for 30 years. And to that extent, I think it's a young man's game. I mean, you know, it's technology, the social media there. I just think it's a young person's game. And, it was time after 30 years to step away.
One of the things you hear from coaches, and just listening to that answer, I wonder if you fall into this, is that you're so consumed with everything. And one of the things that seems to happen is the losses linger with you, and it's constant. Why did we do this? But you don't get the same level of excitement and fun from the wins, because that's like, well, that's what's supposed to happen. But the losses just dig at you. Would you, is that fair to say for you?
It's funny that you said that. So when you asked me the question about 5 minutes ago, I was thinking of it's the moments, right? I'm thinking about Richmond at home on homecoming. We're both really good, and I blitz on a third and short, and they bust one for 45 yards. And they go down and score. You know, I'm like, I'm sitting here kicking myself because I shouldn't have blitzed on that down. And then there was there's the things you hold on to all these years later. Aren't they fabulous wins in the championships? It's the 10 to 12 bad calls that you made that you're still wrestling with, you know, all these years later. But it's hard. And that's well said. And when the losses stay with you, they always stay with you longer than the wins. But when it became a relief, you know, when game day was over and it became a relief that it was over, then I think it's time to go. And it certainly was like that for me. It was more of like, you know, the big wins. It was almost like you're a drug addict. You know, like the highs are so short, and the losses just keep lingering.
You had the two stints as head coach, and then we mentioned you came back to Villanova, and I think you were there till 2018 as a defensive coordinator again, and then you stopped coaching and you went into you were an athletic director and now counselor. And now that you're coming back into a head coach, different dynamic, yes, but still responsible for a program. How much did the years away, does that kind of refresh? And maybe you look at the idea of a head coach. Like I said, it's a different dynamic what you're doing now than what it was at Villanova, URI, stuff like that. But does it make you even more excited because you've got all the experience and you've kind of let it rest for a while and now you're back at it?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, and I feel like the one thing you miss are the relationships, you know, and the intensity of the experience in that relationship. I think, you know, you're kind of, not that it's life and death, because it's not, but like you're kind of living and breathing together, dying together with every big moment in a game, and the intensity of the emotions that you're sharing with your players. Years later, I met a bunch of people, you know, and as an AD and as a counselor, but you know, you're constantly searching for that, you know, that locker room intimacy in a team. You know, where you're just kind of like, you know, we just worked our butt off and we had success, or we worked our butt off and we didn't have the success, and now we're dealing with heartbreak. But I feel like that's the biggest void, is really in the relationships. And, you know, I definitely feel that that's something that, even though it's a different dynamic right now, and coaching females as a male will be different, but I look forward to that, the intensity of that. And the intimacy of that, just the connection.
What will the summer be like for you from getting this program really cooking? And is the plan to play a full spring schedule in 2025?
Yes. So we've had one league meeting regarding that. We'll probably meet again here at the end of May, beginning of June. You know, and then you're talking about things like in college, you have what's called a non-traditional season. You know, football was spring practice, right? And football, when you played football in the fall, you had spring practice. But the reality is every sport on every college campus has what they call a non-traditional season. So we'll have, you know, I think we'll have one or two competition opportunities in the fall. It being a spring sport, obviously, we'll have our anywhere from 6 to 8 competitions in the spring. I think it'll be really structured at that point. You know, really, it's kind of like we're still in the infancy stages here. Like I'm going to high schools, you know, I'm going to high school games 2 to 3 times a week right now, just promoting visibility. I know there'll be some showcases this spring. I know there's at the Polo Grounds in Conshohocken, there's one of the biggest flag football tournaments in the country in a couple weeks on a Saturday and Sunday in May. So just really promoting, heightening visibility. And the other thing too, I think, I really believe flag football will arrive. Like for seniors in high school right now, maybe juniors, it's like, oh, okay, this is like, yeah, I love doing it. Maybe, you know, maybe I'll do it in college. But I think, you know, you have so many young, you know, middle schoolers playing, elementary school girls playing. It's like, wow, like, you know, like football, right? Every football playing 10-year-old envisions playing at Penn State or Notre Dame or even in college. And when that dream dies because of ability, you still dream of playing at Gettysburg College or Muhlenberg or Dickinson College or Eastern University. You know, so the chance to like say, hey man, this is really something that I can do for 4 years, be considered an NCAA student athlete. All of a sudden now that's gonna really enhance my college experience and that's going on my resume. And hopefully, you know, it's a great starting point for potential employers when I get out into the real world too.
Joe Trainer, thanks so much for the time. This was great.
You're the best, Matt. God bless, man. Take care. Hope our paths cross down the road.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Immaculata University head women's flag football coach Joe Trainer for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, can you do us a big favor and leave us a rating and a review? We would really appreciate it. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You walk in tired and hungry, one bad dinner away from losing it. You don't like to cook. You don't want more takeout. You just want something good. That's why there's Dish by Blue Apron. Pre-made meals with at least 20 grams of protein and no artificial flavors or colors, from fridge to fork in 5 minutes or less. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.